Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and the Love Is Podcast. I'm excited to welcome the host of the Love Is Podcast, Kim Sorrell. Kim, what's going on? How are you?
I am doing great, Neil. I'm really excited about our guest today. I watched the documentary last night, so I cannot wait to dive in. Eric Swithin. Did I say that right, Eric?
You
Thanks.
nailed it.
Okay. Is with the Alliance for Ending the Fatherless Epidemic. The numbers that are given in the documentary are staggering, Eric. And I know you have personal experience in this area. And I just want to dive in. So, how did you get involved to begin with the fatherless epidemic that's going on?
Well, I grew up in a broken home, and it was a situation where the family court system really tried to push my dad out of the picture. And so that left me just a wounded duck looking to fill the void in my heart with everything and anything. And so I got caught up in crime and the gang scene, and this bled into my 20s, and I really was just trying to seek validation. And I didn't even understand that I was wounded. That's the thing, is a lot of times when you're deceived, that's the very definition of it, right? So that is where I really began to experience healing, is when I actually began to realize that I had an issue. And there was something going on there that I needed to be healed from. And so once I figured that out, I started to develop a tremendous compassion for kids just like me. And so when I see these kids, I see myself in them, and I'm just compelled to help out and do something about it.
Question basically saying you talked about the court system in the process and how fathers have been kept out of children's lives at times and different things that have happened. Why do you think that's happening, Eric? It happens a lot in stories I'm hearing and things like that.
Well, I don't want to sound cynical. I mean, keep in mind, I was in the United States Marine Corps. I served in Iraq. I bled for this country. But name one thing that the government does well, and I'll wait. We are outsourcing the problems of our society to an entity that's not really good at fixing things. And I don't think they were ever designed to be in a position to do so. They're not supposed to be mommy and daddy. Our society was built on Judeo-Christian values, and our society was built on those values for a reason. And that's why we were successful for so many years. Who built our hospitals and our universities? Who were the first caretakers in all of the foundations of orphanages across our country? It was the church. And so what's happened is the church has been replaced by government, and we're seeing where that's going. And so that's why it's failing. It was never meant to be that way. But typically there's favor given to the mom, and there's a scenario that incentivizes a separation between mom and dad, and dad often gets pushed out of the picture. That's what happened to me.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. I definitely want to talk off air about that, but go ahead, Kim, with your next question.
Yeah, well, that's so interesting that you say that, Eric, because it's not like judges are trained in family counseling or have much information to even go on. I mean, there's a mom and a dad going before a judge, two strangers really, to the judge, and he has to make a decision. It is funny that that is our system and that's the way it works. And then the dads end up getting pushed out is so sad because kids need both a mom and a dad. Like in the documentary that is so good, everybody needs to watch it, The Fatherless Epidemic. It's so well done. And I learned so much watching that documentary. But in the documentary, you talk about your dad's grandfather, right? That was in World War
Two.
II, World War II. And how he wasn't a great dad. And that passed down to the next dad and the next dad and the next dad, and how that plays in to the place that we are today.
That's absolutely right. We like to say that when you have a broken home, you have a broken community. And if you have a broken community, you have a broken society. And so when we have a fatherless situation, and by fatherless, I don't necessarily mean physically not present. I mean that the dad could actually be present, but has no emotional connection to his kids. He's emotionally absent. And that is a lot of times just a product of who they were raised by. And so when you have a broken home, those kids go out broken. And then what does that house look like? It doesn't stay the same necessarily. What we've seen, and we have data to show this, but it gets increasingly worse with each generation.
All right. So like, what are you seeing with homes that don't have a father involved with kids? What are your research has shown and stuff like that?
Well, I left the business world in order to go into full-time ministry and to do this. And so my wife is a lawyer by trade. I'm a consultant. We're both from the big oil business. And so I come from a background in statistics and data. I'm just interested in numbers. And if you actually study the numbers, this is what's fascinating. This will blow your mind. If you look at a chart where you take the intersection of all of our societal ills and you graph out the societal ills in America, at the middle of that intersection, you have the epicenter of all of this data, which is fatherlessness. So just to give you a couple of basic statistics, let's talk financially. $80.7 billion were spent last year in tax dollars on prisons alone. And good data suggests that 90% of felons come from a fatherless home. So 90% of $80.7 billion. That's not counting court costs and the social cost of crime. This is a startling one. Listen to this, 279%. So a fatherless kid is 279% more likely to carry a gun illegally and deal drugs. This one's probably the one that'll hit you in the gut the most. So fatherless girls are 900% more likely to become victims of sexual crimes. And fatherless boys are 14 times more likely to become rapists. I could talk about school dropout rates. I could talk about poverty, substance abuse, runaway kids, suicide. I can go into almost every ill that we have in our society, and they all trace back to fatherlessness because it starts with a broken home. So think about that for a second.
Wow. Yeah. You know, on the documentary, you're there, and then these other guys that have these ministries, you're all banding together to try to help with this issue because it's a big one. And there was one guy on there that said that he so easily could have gotten into a gang, and at the time didn't know why he didn't. And he could have, you know, been an abuser, a drug abuser, an alcohol abuser, but he didn't. And at the time he didn't know why. And it wasn't until he was older that he figured it out. He had a dad at home. So why is that? How does that make the big difference, having a dad at home? What does that do for a kid?
Well, you know, anthropologically, right? You look at the history of this world. We were raised in tribes and small families, and young men were initiated from boyhood to manhood. That's what happened. They went to work with daddy. They were by his side. They learned what it looked like to be a provider and a protector, to go and kill the meat and drag it back to the cave. That's what we've always been like and what we've always done. But for the last 50 to 100 years, that has shifted dramatically. The Industrial Revolution began that chain reaction that really took fathers and sons away from each other because of the job market and the way things were structured, right? So it started there, and now it's just exacerbated through broken homes. And so that's what we see. A kid doesn't have it modeled before him. And when a boy doesn't have it modeled before him, what a man looks like, he's going to go out and seek that initiation on his own. It's ingrained in his DNA. It's who we are as people. He's going to seek validation. He's going to seek approval. And so what we have in our society today, I hate to say it, is we have a bunch of men that are older. They're adults legally, but they're boys on the inside. They were never tested and initiated, and they never had an example set before them of what it's supposed to look like.
What can we do more of to get fathers more involved, especially if you said the court system took them away? What recommendations, what should we do to get this word out, to get fathers more and more involved?
You know, for the dads that feel like they're being kicked out, there's a lot of really good dads that the court system did not side with. And my message to them is, don't give up. Pursue the hearts of your kids. You can still validate them and initiate them from afar. And when they're old enough to make that decision, I promise you, it'll be worth it. You know, my dad and I reconciled, And the fact that he apologized to me and asked for my forgiveness was what I needed for healing. And so I could say that, you know, as well to single moms, you know, you cannot be dad. You have got to help facilitate a male role model in your kid's life. And if we're really going to be honest, right, we need to be objective. We need to look at numbers and data. We can't just be emotional about our decisions. Where we see the most fruit in this country, boys that should be dead or in prison like me, where we see the most fruit, where fatherless kids are not going and getting into crime, going to prison, or having premature death, it comes from a relationship with God. Now, whether that is something you hear on your show on a regular basis or not, it doesn't matter. Let's follow the data. The success rate of kids who are mentored by a loving spiritual father figure, or they have older adults in their life that have a strong moral code and they're willing to share the love of God, which in Judeo-Christian values and in theology, a loving father is who God is portrayed to be. And so that's why it makes sense that an earthly father and the image of the earthly father has been shattered in society. If that is shattered, then children have a very skewed perception of who God really is. They think of God as brutal or punitive. You know, his knee-jerk response is to pull out the belt or walk away. And so we have an obligation for kids to see God in a healthy manner. And we have an obligation to look at the data. Honestly, our prison reform systems, it doesn't work. There is no reform coming from prisons. Very little. And if there is, it's primarily because there are Christians that go into the prison and minister to the prisoners. There's no reform in the family court system. There's no reconciliation. There's no healthy mediation. There's no good, healthy counseling. And so the only thing we're seeing with fatherless kids is that a Christian man or a Christian family is willing to mentor those kids and fill in the gap. It's about the church stepping up and stepping in.
Wow. And you have done just that, because you have children of your own, a beautiful wife, and two kids of your own, I believe, and seven boys that you've kind of adopted into your family. What is that situation like?
I'll try not to get emotional when we talk about that. You're right. My wife is beautiful and my kids are unbelievable. And I'll tell you, the mistake we make when we talk about mentorship is we think of a program. We're such we're interesting people. We like to put everything in neat little spheres, right? You know, so I'm going to go volunteer at the YMCA 2 hours every Thursday. You know, that's a great start. You know, that's where you might meet some kids and be able to make a little bit of a difference. But here's where it gets really fun is when you're willing to involve those kids in your life and they get to eat dinner with you. They get to run errands with you. When you change the oil in your truck, they're under the car with you. Your kids think of them as siblings. My kids have African-American siblings and they have Hispanic siblings. They have siblings that were raised on the mission field overseas. They got siblings from the suburbs. But, you know, these young men that I've included into my life and into my family have enriched my family tenfold. They're one of the most beautiful aspects of my whole life. So it's not a chore. It's not a burden. It's a gift to a family. And then to that young man or that young woman, you are providing a healing to their heart, a balm to their soul that's going to change their life forever. And most importantly, we have an opportunity to point them to a perfect heavenly father who's the only solution to anything that we have in terms of societal ills, in terms of brokenness. There's nothing else out there that is a solution to our societal ills other than a relationship with the one true living God. So that's the truth. These boys of mine are amazing. And my kids hug them and call them brother. And I call them son. And it was just a natural thing, volunteering occasionally. And then it just happens. Those relationships happen. They asked me, would you be my daddy? And I said, yes, of course I will.
They see that love, especially where there's not a father involved. As a teacher, I saw that so much. What do you want to teach fathers today? Like the documentary, what is the ultimate goal of this documentary for you?
There's a primary goal when we started this thing. You know, the story behind the film and how it came to be is nothing shy of miraculous, but our primary goal is to call the American church to action. The American church is asleep, and there is no plan B. That's plan A. And they need to realize that it's our duty. It's no one else's duty to tend to the needs of the broken, to the prisoner, to the sick, to the poor, to the dying, to the destitute, to the fatherless, the orphan, the widow, the single mom. That's our responsibility, nobody else's. And so that's primary. And that's been our mission all along, is to encourage the church to get involved. But there's been all these secondary and tertiary, you know, outcomes. And what's really cool is we have seen dads stand up in the middle of the movie theater and be willing to commit to ask their kids for forgiveness. We've had dads who've given up because they were just discouraged. You know, it was the mom that cheated on him and destroyed the marriage. It's not always the dad's fault. You know, we see more infidelity on the girl's side than the boy's side. Again, let's look at data. We see, really, it's a lot of this, really 50-50. Guys are sometimes the problem. Girls are sometimes the problem. Divorce is nasty. But we've had guys stand up in the theater and be like, hey, I'm going to pursue my kids' hearts. I'm not going to give up anymore. That's really cool. And here's the good one. We've seen kids and full-grown adults stand up and say, I need to forgive dad. I need to forgive mom. And I need to be healed from this. And I need to move on. And that's been really, really beautiful. And then the most beautiful thing that's come from it, honestly, is I think people are beginning to see more and more that God is a perfect father. He's not distant. We're not stepkids. And I can go into the theology of that if you're ever interested, but it's the truth. You know, when we are adopted into his family, we are real children of his. And to know that and be aware of that identity of who we are in him is going to change everything in your life, period.
So let's go. Let's just jump right. One more question. Then Kim has her love is question. But I want to jump into this more about, you know, forgiveness. How do we build a relationship with our kids if there's a brokenness? How, for fathers that are distant, not by their own fault, but it's just happened, get back? How do they fight? What do recommendations do you make not to give up through the power and the challenges in the court system to the just situations that happen in a broken relationship that leads to sometimes being fatherless?
That is such a rich question. You know, in my story, when my dad said, hey, will you forgive me? I made so many mistakes, Eric, and I wish I could do it over again. And I've lost so much sleep that I wasn't there. That's all I needed. It was like I was just like waiting to hear that. And it was genuine and sincere. And then he apologized 15 more times. You know, he's on his deathbed right now. They're about to switch him over to hospice. He has terminal cancer.
I'm sorry to hear that.
You know, and that was when that movie was filmed, he was given months to live. And that was a couple of years ago. So we've enjoyed spending time together during this process. But, you know, listen, that's where you start is, you know, men need to have a humility and a willingness to apologize and admit their mistakes. And that's, again, what it means to be a daddy, is to demonstrate humility to our kids and show young men the dangers of pride and arrogance, that being willing to say, I'm sorry, is one of the most powerful things we can instill in our kids, and to ask for forgiveness. So that's really huge. I always encourage dads, even if you're kicked out of the picture, you can always write a letter. And those words, they will keep those letters. They might tear up the first two, but by the 20th letter, they're going to open them. And you have no idea what will happen when they turn 14 and they have a say-so on where they can go custody-wise. You just don't know. Don't give up no matter what. And then again, our biggest obligation is as men, and this is speaking to men, is to point our kids towards a perfect father, which I mentioned multiple times, but it needs to be said. You know, if we're talking data and statistics, that's one of the most important things we can do as men, is point our kids to a perfect daddy and to tell them with humility that I'm going to make so many mistakes, but I'll be quick to say I'm sorry.
Eric, this is such tremendous. Now Kim has her question about love. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, thank you for all of this, Eric. It's so true, everything that you're saying. And it is hard for people to look to God as a loving God when we call him Father, and they don't have that demonstrated in their life, then they don't know what a loving Father is. And it's hard, a hard thing to embrace. So to be that loving Father to those seven kids and other people out there, to other kids, and hopefully this is something that grows and grows and grows. I was diagnosed a few years ago with cancer, and sorry about your dad. Cancer sucks, by the way.
It does.
And lung cancer, I think, is what your dad has, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's so sad. I'm so sorry. But 4 months after I was diagnosed, my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and he passed away 6 weeks after that. And it made me question some things. And one of the things that made me question was the real meaning of love. So I set out on this journey. I committed a year to figuring out the true meaning of love. And so I took 1 Corinthians 13, and I took it one word at a time. So my first month was love is patient, you know, figuring out what does that mean? Love is patient. The things that I found out just blew my mind. Things that were taught about love that are not love. And I think that goes right along with what you're saying, that not demonstrating a loving father, but also not demonstrating love, period. Like what love really is. And God is love. John says God is love. So if God is love and we're created in his image, we are too, right? So tell me how love is involved in your life, in what you do, in your passion for all of this.
The truth is, even as a Christian in full-time ministry, I graduated seminary with a master's in theology and ministry. I still had a really skewed perception of God as Father and God as love. And let me tell you, it changed everything. You know, we really exclude Father from church and from ministry. We talk about Jesus all day long, but Jesus said, when you pray, go into your room in secret and pray to your Father. You know, when the disciples asked him how to pray, how do we start? Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. So I really started to meditate like you, just meditating on the Bible, what it actually says, and seeking who God's character, you know, really is. And it really, I landed on John 16 and John 17. It says that before the creation of the world, God was loving his Son. So before there was humans or earth, that's what the Trinity is. It's a Father loving his Son by the Spirit. It's a perfect family in perfect fellowship. And then it says, those of us who are in Jesus and he's in us, receive the same love from the Father that the Father has for Jesus. We're not stepkids, you know, and we see a lot of violence and a lot of things in Scripture, and we question the goodness of the Father. But here is what love is. Love is, even when we were enemies of God, he sent his most prized, loving possession to come rescue us and give up everything. He left the 99 to go with the one. That's how much he loves us. And when we understand that, our core beliefs inform all of our thoughts, attitudes, and behaviors. When we understand that core belief, it changes our whole world. And so that's what love is. Love gives it away. Love chases down that fatherless kid. Love doesn't hoard it all and keep it for itself. Love sacrifices.
Oh, Eric, I wish we had more time. Best place, really quickly, 30 seconds, where can find info for the film?
Go to www.fatherlessepidemic.com. There's also a free discussion guide Bible study that you can download, but that's the place to go.
All right. We appreciate it. That was, again, the Neil Haley Show special simulcast with the Love Is podcast. Take care, guys.